Buddha, Shri Dharma, Shri the Sangha. I want to do some talks this winter on the Diamond Sutra. And I'll start by reading one of the very short chapters of it. This is the third little chapter. The Diamond Sutra is cast in the form of a dialogue between the Buddha and one of his chief disciples, Subhuti. The Buddha said, "Subhuti, all the bodhisattvas should discipline their thoughts as follows. All living creatures," that means they should think as follows, "all living creatures of whatever class, whether born from eggs, from wounds, from wombs, from moisture, by transformation, by form, or with form or without form, whether in a state of thinking or exempt from thought necessity, or wholly beyond all thought realms, all these are caused by me to attain unbounded liberation, nirvana. Yet when vast, uncountable, immeasurable numbers of beings have thus been liberated, verily, no being has been liberated. Why is this, Subhuti? It is because no bodhisattva who is a real bodhisattva cherishes the idea of an ego entity, a personality, a being, or a separated individuality. Most of this sutra, a great part of this sutra, repeats in various forms this teaching. And I want to just express as simply as I can the fundamentally simple and very profound idea that this is expressing. First of all, we need to understand that the idea of the bodhisattva here is of someone whose training in selflessness is very far advanced. Selflessness, for selflessness, think unselfishness. A bodhisattva trains for self and others, and ultimately does training for the sake of the training, following the eternal, as I so often say, for the sake of the following, not for the sake of any selfish attainment, any selfish reward. Looking upon all beings as if they were one's own children. Looking upon all beings with compassion. More importantly by far, or more truly by far, trusting one's own inner instinct that the love of the eternal extends to all forms of being, embraces all forms of being, and that all merit, all goodness lies within the eternal. So the Buddha is here saying that a bodhisattva takes this view of the world. And that the bodhisattva longs for the true spiritual welfare, the enlightenment of all beings. But that in so, or perhaps it's better to say, and that in so viewing the world and in so longing for the welfare, the true spiritual welfare of all beings, the bodhisattva does not cherish the idea of a being, an ego, a separate personality, etc., etc. It's not so hard to see what this means. If one thinks in terms of good people and bad people, virtuous people and people who are dominated by vice, greedy people and generous people, hateful people and kind people, deluded people and wise people. When the Buddha says that the Bodhisattva does not cherish the idea of an ego, a separate being, a personality, etc., means that the Bodhisattva does not view people and beings in this way. In other places in the sutra, the Buddha talks about attributed characteristics. There's a rather philosophical way of putting an important spiritual point. You see, if we take the kind of philosophical terminology out of it, it means that the Bodhisattva is working on seeing the Buddhahood of all beings, the Buddha nature of all beings. Reverend Master used to say, look with the eyes of a Buddha and you will see the heart of a Buddha. The Bodhisattva, its term means a being, Bodhi, enlightenment, Sattva being. A being who is destined for enlightenment, a being whose whole life is focused upon enlightenment, and not just a particular experience by any means, meaning original enlightenment, a being whose life is devoted to the following of the eternal. That's a Bodhisattva. So what is being said here is in order to train ourselves in this way, we need to look upon other people and other beings with the eyes of a Buddha and look for within them, look for the heart of a Buddha. If we look with the eyes of a Buddha truly, and we truly, when we're having difficulty doing this, if we turn to the eternal for help, not to psychology, not to old opinions and emotions, not to our personal sense of hurt, or our personal sense of right and wrong and justice and injustice, but if we look deeply within ourselves and ask for, turn to the eternal for help, asking for help when it is good to ask for help, then the external appearances of things fall away. And we are left with the simple truth, this too is Buddha. Even in the midst of hell, this too is Buddha. These demons, these horrors, this pain, this too is Buddha. I'll repeat what the Buddha says here. No Bodhisattva who is a real Bodhisattva cherishes the idea of an ego entity, a personality, a being, or a separated individuality. I'll read now the fourth chapter, which I have to say, I just totally love this, and always have this teaching. He says, furthermore, Subhuti, in the practice of charity, think of charity as generosity, dana, generosity, not just giving material goods, but always cultivating generosity of spirit, cherishing within our own heart generosity of spirit, as Reverend Master Jiyu so often emphasized and so magnificently showed in her life and in every aspect of her teaching and her training. So he says, Subhuti, in the practice of generosity, a bodhisattva should be detached. That is to say, he should practice generosity without regard to appearances, without regard to sound, odor, touch, flavor, or any quality. It always makes it sound so philosophical. Maybe it's a translation, maybe it's just the kind of way that things were put. But we have to remember that there was a spiritual understanding of what these things meant. Think about it without regard to sound, odor, touch, flavor, or any quality. You practice charity, generosity, without considering whether the person with whom you are practicing or who is a beneficiary of your generosity is a smelly person or an evil-looking person or a coarse person or a saintly person or any of these things. It is going to the source within one's own heart, going to one's own Buddha nature, and from that place, doing that which it is truly good to do, always bearing in mind the magnificence and the inexpressible love of our true nature. He says, Subhuti, thus should the bodhisattva practice charity without attachment. In such a case, his merit is incalculable. Subhuti, what do you think? Can you measure all the space extending eastward? No, world-honored one, I cannot. Then can you, Subhuti, measure all the space extending southward, westward, northward, or in any direction, including nadir and zenith? No, world-honored one, I cannot. Well, Subhuti, equally incalculable is the merit of the bodhisattva who practices generosity without any attachment to appearances. Subhuti, bodhisattva should persevere one-pointedly in this instruction. Tendo Nyojo told Dogen Zenji on the night of his transmission, do not think it is easy. Study in detail. It is very important that we do whatever it is that is good to do to the best of our abilities without attachment to the results of what we are doing. Without cherishing, holding on to, clinging to an idea of accumulated benefit or merit of any kind to ourselves as a result of what we are doing. If we do good deeds while remaining cherishing an attachment to gain of any kind, material or spiritual, to an attachment to a particular result, then we have at best what is called in the Platform Sutra, the Sutra of the Six Patriarch, tainted merits. The true merit resides always within the eternal. All we need to do is entrust to the eternal the consequences and do the best we can to work on our share of the causes. Do the things that we believe to be, that we trust to be good to do, and entrust the consequences, entrust the results into the hands of the eternal. Dogen put it very simply. We make offerings without any expectation of any return. We make offerings though we ourselves seem to get nothing at all. We make offerings when it is good to make the offering. If it is good to make the offering, we can just trust, simply trust, that the results of the offering will be beneficial. Even if they do not seem to be beneficial initially, even if there do not even seem to be any results. To live in this way is of necessity to live one's life from a meditative point of view. It is of necessity to live this life in dependence upon the eternal rather than on external things. I say of necessity because self is tricky and it'll get us. Delusion is convoluted and tricky and it'll get us. When we find we've been got, when we've been nabbed by self, when we've been hijacked by delusion, we need to bow, dust ourselves off, pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off. You know, admit to ourselves, yes, I got nailed there, and just move on. Let it go. Let it go. Do not cling to a good self, do not cling to a bad self. If we do not seek after and cling to merits, we will not so readily judge ourselves or others. If we focus our attention on the imagined merits or demerits of others, we will also focus our attention on the imagined merits and demerits of ourselves, and vice versa. Our job in training is to live in oneness to the best of our ability with the flow of immaculacy, and not to clutter it up with our own ideas of virtue and vice, good and evil, right and wrong, justice and injustice, fairness and unfairness. Just doing our own training to the best of our ability and leaving the consequences, entrusting the consequences into the hands of the eternal.